This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World. Whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at KABF.org, WAMF.org, or AcornRadio.org. A podcast will be available of this show on these websites and at www.chieforganizer.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Richard Gahan about his book that he wrote with that he developed with Michael Williams called Revolution in Black and White, Photographs of the Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers. Welcome to Wade's World, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Wade.
Well, this was quite the book, and we got to give people a sense of this. This is not a paperback. This is a big old, you know, carry it with two hands thing, because it's got some great pictures in it. But tell us, who was Ernest Withers and why do we care about him?
Well, Ernest Withers, I think, was one of the very best photographers of the civil rights era outside of Washington and actually anywhere. He was based in Memphis, and he photographed Memphis. He photographed the end of Negro League baseball. He photographed the birth of rhythm and blues and jazz in Memphis on Beale Street. And he also was the kind of community photographer. I think that's what interested us the very most. He photographed church services. He photographed funerals, proms, swim meets. And in the course of, he started right after World War II, and he died in 2007. And in the course of his life, he took several million photographs. There's always a figure put out, and I don't think we really know how many framed. And this book really looks at his documentation of African-American life in and around Memphis from about 1946 to the assassination of Martin Luther King in 68.
So he was almost one of these guys or women that you see in a neighborhood, photography
Absolutely.
Shop, that you see pictures in the front of people's weddings and graduations. But where he was different is he was sort of in the right place at the right time and always had a camera with him and ready to go. Is that kind of how it worked?
That's exactly right. He had eight children, and he lived his life, you know, was based on taking photographs and, more important, selling photographs. So he took jobs of just about anybody. I mean, he took school jobs, and he took jobs, a lot of work for Jet Magazine, weekly and daily African-American papers, obviously the Tri-State Defender and the Chicago Defender. And he got around. He had a lot of talent, but even more than talent, he had a lot of determination. And he really realized as he was getting up in age that what he was taking wasn't just commercial photography, but it was history.
And how many pictures, you mentioned that Withers might have taken several million pictures. How many pictures
right.
did you and Michael Williams have to go right. through in order to call a number to put in this book?
Yeah, I would guess we went through several hundred thousand photographs. We really concentrated on black and white photographs, and most of the pictures that we looked at were medium format or large format. So I don't know if your listeners remember that, but these were pictures taken kind of before the 35-millimeter days. And so they were a little bit more cumbersome and a little bit fewer. Once cameras got to, you know, have a roll of 36, which he started around 1968, then that number of pictures even went up farther, because instead of taking one or two pictures at a time, he was or 12 pictures at a time, you know, he was taking 36.
And were these pictures easily accessible within a collection? Or I know this was covered in a book, but you might want to share it with people.
Right. So he ran a photo studio, a commercial photo studio, and when he passed away, his daughter Rosalind, who's very much alive and became the executor of his estate, and she was determined to share his work with the world. So she has created a Ernest Withers Museum at the end of Beale Street, and it's free, and it's open till about midnight because people are on Beale Street until late. And as she says, people kind of come into the studio drunk, and they leave sober because they see these incredibly, you know, incredible pictures of the struggle, the dream, you know, pictures of Medgar Evers' funeral, pictures of Martin Luther King's assassination, and pictures of B.B. King and life and music and love and lust. And so it's they're always very, very surprised. It's a place that people get a really firm understanding of life in Memphis and the South, much more from this museum and now from the book, because in a sense the book is kind of a walking museum. You know, you can get it in your home and have it, look through it.
So a number of people listening to this interview, they're not the ones around the world, but are in places like New Orleans and Arkansas and Greenville, Mississippi. So Memphis is not unknown territory. Obviously, Beale
sure.
Street is, you refer to as a popular music venue. And
right.
The arguments can go until both of us are under the ground about whether or not jazz and other forms of music were born there or just got practiced there or whatever. But Beale Street is quite – what I have to enjoy a lot is sort of – I mean, having worked in some of these neighborhoods, Binghamton and other neighborhoods that are mentioned, this was a slice of real life. It gave
yeah.
a picture of African-American family life that was different than what people might have thought was there, and sort of the headline may have been the civil rights movement, but behind that headline is people still doing what they do, right?
I agree. I think that those are some of the strongest pictures he has, African-American families around the dinner table, posing before graduation. There's beautiful pictures of proms, things like that. You know, I've talked to a lot of people, obviously, who lived in Memphis during that time, and they talk about really the sacrifice they made for segregation, that they knew that this very special community of theirs was going to be broken up by segregation. And they did it because they thought it was important for society. But they knew that their community was, you know, going to end in a lot of ways as the city merged, you know, as people moved into other neighborhoods.
As the impacts of integration is what you're talking about, right?
Right, exactly.
Right.
And I know, you know, there are people out there. I know there are white people out there that think that that African Americans had this great desire to move into white communities, and obviously that wasn't true. They knew it was important for society that cities are integrated, but you know, until there was integration, there were special things that, you know, Negro League baseball is a really good example. You know, Jackie Robinson, in a lot of ways, ended Negro League baseball. And as important as it was that the majors got integrated, there were a lot of collateral damage, you know. And Withers took beautiful pictures of Sunday afternoons in Martin Stadium, and people would dress up and it looked like Easter. You know, they was a really important part of their day.
Well, and this was we don't want to, you know, now in modern pro sports and whatever, they're official. You know, if you go to a game of the Memphis NBA team or the New Orleans NBA team, I mean, there's, you
right.
know, you couldn't just be a photographer. You'd have to be the official photographer of the New Orleans Saints or whatever. But Withers worked the crowd.
He sure did.
He was there on his own. He was a hustler, wasn't he? Because, well, I don't want to give people the wrong impression that somehow the baseball team said, hey, Ernest, come on over and take some pictures. He got there. He was there. He took pictures. He would find people out on dates or the family. He would take a picture and sell it later. And it seemed to be what you were saying in the book.
Absolutely. And he did have access to everything, not because he was official, but because he had this really, really strong personality, a personality that he was very likable. People knew that if their event was photographed, that Ernest would get those pictures out to somebody. You know, he spread the word. Andrew Young, who wrote the introduction of the book, talks about how important people like Ernest and other photographers were in spreading the word of the civil rights movement because they could get these images out. You see these pictures that Ernest took of music on Beale Street and off Beale Street, and he's always on the stage. And, you just can't see that kind of, picture anymore. There's such love between the audience and the performers. It's long gone. It's not going to happen again.
Well, that's exactly right. We're talking to Richard Cahan, who with Michael Williams has put together, I think they used to call them coffee table books. Who knows who's got coffee tables or who does those things? But it's called Revolution Black and White, Photographs of Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers. Talking about the pictures from Beale Street, there are two pictures I found especially powerful. One had Elvis Presley in it. So many of these pictures were of African-American life and civil rights movement. But that picture was interesting, and what y'all wrote about it was interesting. Why don't you share that?
Yeah, Withers took photographs of Elvis because Elvis hung around the African-American community a lot. He learned a lot of his moves. He learned the style. And not only was he taking from the African-American community, he was also giving back. People adored him in the 1950s, black and white. And so there's a picture of him in December 1956, and Elvis came to the Goodwill Review, which was a really important entertainment event in Memphis. I think it was sponsored by the Tri-State Defender, and it was an event that raised – oh, it was sponsored, I'm sorry, by the radio station WDIA, and it raised an incredible amount of money. And Elvis, in December 1956, was quite – the phenom, and there's a picture of him in a group. They were called the Teen Town Singers, smiling, and it kind of shows this kind of relationship between Elvis Presley and the African American community. They say that he used to stand outside of gospel churches, listening to music. And interestingly, Ernest Withers said he only photographed about 50 white people in his early years, and that was one of them. There's a very famous clothier store called Lenski's in Memphis on Beale Street.
Right.
Now it's at the Peabody Hotel. And the son of the owner said that his father told Ernest that he should just spend his time photographing Elvis. And he said if Ernest would have listened to his father, he would have been a millionaire if he would have just documented Elvis during those years.
Well, and
so
the
you
picture
never know.
There is that. I mean, Elvis is by himself as the only white person
he
in
is.
That crowd. And part of what y'all said in the text notes was that this was not things that he didn't call the local press. These weren't publicity stunts. These were
exactly
Elvis. I mean, people forget about, if you're a certain age, obviously Elvis is still somebody current in your memory. A lot of people forget about Elvis, but Elvis was quite the social and political and cultural figure in not only the Mid-South, but all over the country in that era. So
he was.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. No, he had a big effect on American culture. He changed the world,
There's no doubt, and it still reverberates. The other picture I really enjoyed was the famous James Brown.
Right,
he had a
right.
Great picture there. And that was another world changer in terms of, I remember going to the New Orleans Municipal Auditorium where me and a buddy were about the only non-African-Americans there. It was one of the greatest shows I ever saw in my life. He was just such an entertainer.
Absolutely.
It was, were shows you never forgot. I mean, they do all these fancy things you see in, stadiums and whatever, but you put James Brown on a stage, and you got blood and sweat there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he shows, and Withers shows so many entertainers in their early years. You know, there's a picture of B.B. King on stage, and B.B. King's wearing shorts, Bermuda shorts. And later
part of your comment is he thought Bermuda shorts were quite the style at that time.
Exactly. He felt like he was very Esquire-esque.
Yeah, that's right. So to think of B.B. King in Bermuda shorts is just a whole new I don't know how you, sure. Once people look at your book, I don't know how they're going to get that image out of their minds. But
I agree.
But he saw a lot of the great female singers at that time too were recorded in those pictures.
Absolutely. There's somebody I didn't know about, but is really interesting is Big Mabel, who had a huge, you know, a whole lot of shaking going on, and she's famous for singing Candy. There's pictures of Ruth Brown, nobody who came through Memphis did not get photographed by Withers.
And these days, the thing for musicians is having a documentary, but in those days, those pictures traveled. I mean, many of these pictures were in, you mentioned the Tri-State Defender and the Chicago paper and Jet magazine. A lot of these outlets don't exist at this point. This is a loss, isn't it?
It sure is. And Withers knew that he was usually the only photographer at these events. So even though this was entertainment, he called it news. And it turns out he was right, because these people ended up, as you say, having big effects way beyond the stage.
Because those were papers that were read. I mean, I don't know which ones of those are even still alive. I mean, there's so many publications, particularly in as advertising has drifted to other media, that just don't exist anymore in the community.
Yep, I agree.
But so Ernest Withers became, I mean, obviously the civil rights movement came to Memphis, so he was right there as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think Memphis is such an important town for the civil rights story, not just because of the sanitation worker strike and King's assassination, but it was in the heart of what, you know, they call the Mid-South, and this was the stopping off point. If people were going north, they oftentimes came through Memphis and kind of then decided, you know, is it going to be Chicago or Detroit? And then it's also Ernest Withers moved to Chicago in the 40s and came back to Memphis. So it's also kind of a rebound for people who went up north and didn't like it and came back to the South, and they didn't necessarily want to go back to the farm. And they liked the idea of an urban place, but maybe Chicago was too big or too north, and so a lot of people came back to Memphis.
So he just happened to be in the right place at the right time, but it's more than that, because his business was commercial. He could have avoided things like the sanitation strike, couldn't he?
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. He understood the significance of events. One thing that really moved me was his coverage in 1955 of the Emmett Till trial in Sumner, Mississippi.
Exactly.
And not only did he take some amazing pictures, but then he put together this little brochure, which we kind of recreated in the book. It was a 20-page brochure that he called The Complete Photo Story of the Till Murder Case, and it sold for $1. There's only a couple copies still around. But interestingly, I just came across a video showing Emmett Till's mother, Mamie, about 20 years ago, around 2000. And she was talking about the effect of that brochure, that it got into people's houses and they could see the photographs of, the Till corpse. And they could see that he told the whole story from pictures of the store through the trial. And that had a huge effect on the civil rights movement and getting that story out.
And the pictures were gruesome as well.
They were. They're hard to look at 20 years later, but obviously really important historical documents.
And
here's Ernest everywhere.
And this is another issue that's still in the news. I mean, I was in Mississippi recently, and they just had to create a new memorial for Till because of the supremacists and other kinds of violence. I mean, this one is almost impossible to, hopefully it's impossible to deface. I mean, and I guess it also luckily has an early warning system, so that you get too close to it. It went off and scared some people off recently, but this is one of those things that's an ongoing tragedy, and Withers' role in making it so well known as the tragedy it was very critical. That was one of the harder parts of the book to look at. We're talking to Richard Cahan about the book he and Michael Williams put together, Revolution in Black and White, Photographs of the Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers. So let's go into the – so that sort of made his name to some degree as a race man, as it was known at that time. And but his relationship was comfortable with civil rights participants, movement leaders, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had a very close relationship with, obviously Martin Luther King, with Medgar Evers. Medgar Evers would oftentimes, who lived in Mississippi, oftentimes stop in Memphis, and Withers was the person, because they were close friends, who would pick him up on the train. And as the train, as he transferred from trains, he would spend afternoons with Withers. Withers, there wasn't anyone who didn't know Withers, that Withers didn't know. He was, really considered an important friend and somebody who was, spreading the news of the movement.
And certainly even in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference deliberations, they allowed Withers to come in and take some photographs of their deliberations as well, didn't they?
Sure. He seemed to have no bounds at all. There's pictures of King in the basement of churches strategizing on the next event. There's obviously pictures of King in his motel room at the Lorraine Motel. So Withers was a welcome person throughout his career.
And which pictures did you find the most powerful of the civil rights era when y'all were going through?
Withers took some very famous pictures of the sanitation workers with the I Am a Man sign. But I think his most important picture is probably from the Emmett Till trial.
Uh-huh. Certainly, you got a couple of pictures of King that were more relaxed than some of the ones we see. You can see Andrew Young and some of the others and Abernathy.
Right.
But not as many as I would have thought. So it is, as you say. Now, one of the problems that you had to address in looking at Withers' photography is after his death.
Right.
It became known that he was also classified as an informant for the FBI around civil rights issues themselves. So I'll let you address that and talk about how some of the participants saw Withers in that role.
Well, it's an important part of his story. We certainly address it in the book. Withers died in 2007, and in 2011 it was revealed that he was a paid informant by the FBI over a period of over 10 years. And at first, it kind of lets the balloon out of this wonderful life story. But in other ways, it's very hard. The FBI approached him in 1959 and asked him to take pictures for them. And I think it would have been very, very difficult for somebody to say no to the FBI. He later was interviewed, and Withers was interviewed. He said he was very careful not to get involved with sensitive situations, that he would, not give the FBI that kind of information. And, some people feel like he betrayed the movement. I think most people who knew him, people like Andrew Young, really believe that there was nothing to hide, and Withers didn't really compromise much information at all.
Now, it was interesting to read the comments by Reverend Jesse Jackson and Andrew Young. They were very defensive, and in some ways, the core of their argument was that you had to place yourself in 1959, and what choice would Withers have had when asked by the FBI?
Exactly.
And obviously, he doesn't have a way to defend himself. And although I think part of what you said in the notes that accompany these pictures is that his family and others believe that there was nothing he ever provided that would have had an adverse impact on the participants or leadership. Is that
absolutely? And they certainly don't affect the pictures that he left behind. So that's really what we concentrated on.
Well, and those are the slices of history that are so important. Dick Gregory, the famous humorist and civil rights activist, was less kind about it, and obviously, others are going to have different points of view, but I think we often have to, separate things that happened 50 years ago from the real legacy that's involved in these photographs, and I think that's what y'all have tried to do, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the photographs, I think, speak for themselves. I think that if Withers had been alive when these revelations would have came out, I think he would have had something to say. I think it's hard to judge somebody who is, literally approached by the FBI in 1959. I don't know how you say no to them. And they really didn't affect the pictures that are in this book. So we certainly noted it and we discussed it, but this book is really about the legacy he left behind in photographs.
One of the things that interests me, and maybe I misread this, is it seemed like there was a point at which he was taking pictures all the time of civil rights activity, and then it just stopped from the way you described it. Was there any sense of why or why he didn't continue to follow this, or was it just people weren't crossing the street around Memphis where he was stationed on Beale Street, or what?
Yeah, I think that was really it. I don't think he stopped. I think that the drama of the movement really ended with right after King's assassination, and he photographed the move to resurrection, the creation of Resurrection City.
Right. The what other pictures? So when did he actually stop taking pictures?
He continued all the way till his death in 2007. But he did switch to 35 millimeter. He switched to color. And so there's a whole different look to the photographs after these early photographs. But he was certainly the photographer all the way through his career and celebrated in his later life.
And then, but in his in the book, we don't have many pictures from the end of the 20th, early 21st century, do we?
Right. We actually, no, we ended it right after King's death, because
right.
There's a real narrative from those early pictures of the Till trial till 1968. And so, we left that for future books, in a sense.
Now, you and Michael Williams are in some ways historical archivists of photographs.
Right.
Is that correct? So is
anybody
picking up the flag and running the next couple of miles to document this kind of history?
Oh, I think there's a lot of great photographers out here. What I think set Withers apart was he pretty much did it on his own, his own little photo studio, and he did freelance for publications. But now most photographers, there's very few photographers who document life day to day in a commercial way, and then also around as photojournalists. So I think that's what really sets them apart.
Well, and that's a loss too, because
absolutely.
The sort of pictures of daily life that are so important and humanizing people in this sort of polarizing time are so important if we had ways to view them and see them. Look, Richard, obviously, I was a huge fan of this book. Went through every picture, spent a lot of time in Memphis. My lifelong partner worked in Memphis for several years, and a lot of fond memories there. So this meant a lot to me, and it was fun to go through it. But for other people who want to get a copy of the book might have some questions and know something about Withers, want to reach out to you, how can they get a copy of this book or contact you?
Well, they can go to our website, which is cityfilespress.com, and that's just three words put together, city and then F-I-L-E-S and press.com.
Cityfilespress.com, okay, good.
Right, and they can actually reach me, my name, Richard Cahan, C-A-H-A-N, @gmail.com. And they can find the book hopefully at independent bookstores or at Barnes & Noble, and they can find the book on Amazon or through our website.
Now, is there any sort of exhibits of Withers photography that are going to be anywhere around the Middle South that you or Williams might be accompanying?
We don't have any scheduled.
You just have to go to
Beale
Street.
We don't have anything scheduled in Memphis. Yeah, and you can buy the book at Beale Street at the Withers Collection Museum. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, it's been fun talking about this. This was a great period, and I can't recommend too highly Revolution in Black and White, Photographs of the Civil Rights Era by Ernest C. Withers, Richard Cahan, and Michael Williams. Thank you so much. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sings, things you've never seen and will never forget. Wade's World is underwritten by the Darrow Foundation, a progressive force enabling change based in Little Rock, Arkansas. And as the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade.
This program is distributed by Affiliated Media Foundation Movement to our growing community of Voice of the People radio stations, with production assistance provided by our sister stations, KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, Arkansas, WDSV 91.9 FM in Greenville, Mississippi, WAMF 90.3 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, and KOCH 99.9 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. For more information, please visit our website at affiliatedmediamovement.org.